Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 322, I'm joined by journalists Mike Heiss and Mark Henniger to talk about what we saw and heard at the recent Cedia Expo. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded September 22nd, 2016. Episode 322, Cedia 2016 Roundup. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit. Hey everybody, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek and editor of absforum.com. This week I'm joined by two of my colleagues, Michael Heiss, first of all, an industry consultant, and jolly good Cedia fellow. Hey Mike, welcome back.
Good afternoon or good evening, depending upon where you guys all are.
Indeed. And also Mark Henniger, associate editor of ABS Forum and my colleague in crime there. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, Scott. Glad to be on the show again.
Yeah, me too. Those of you who are tuned into the live stream at live.twit.tv can get into the chat room there, or you can go to irc.twit.tv and post questions for us as we go, and I will pass along as many as I can. It helps if you put my screen name, which is Scott Wilkinson, my name, no dots or dashes, because that shows up in a different color on my screen, and my eye is more easily drawn to it. And the questions today will be about the recent Cedia show. Cedia standing for Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association, which is so much of a mouthful that everybody just says Cedia. And three of us were there last week in lovely Dallas, Texas. And let's start with some overall impressions, first of all. I was quite impressed that there seemed to be kind of an upbeat feeling throughout the show. Mike, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And other than last year's, I've been to every one of these things. And I think it was upbeat. And I know it's a little off topic for HTG, but I think one of the interesting things that was driving it a lot was VUI, voice UI. And the biggest lines that wasn't an audio demo was at the Amazon booth for Alexa.
Right, exactly. And Mark, I think there were a number of announcements, or a couple anyway, of voice control, Alexa maybe being added to some AV products. Am I right about that?
Voice control is coming to HiOS, the Denon whole home network. It's also coming to Sonos through Alexa. So Amazon Alexa is the hot thing, just because it's based on the Star Trek computer, far-field voice recognition. Casual speech, you get answers, you know, you just ask for it. It's the whole Earl Grey tea hot, you know, and it's coming to your music.
Wow. I didn't stop by in any of those demos, but man, if I could just, you know, say household computer, whatever, could you just play me House of Cards or whatever, and they'll just do it? I mean, that would be really cool.
Well, that's maybe what Google is going to do later, I guess, next week or on the 4th, because the Google Home is going to have search capabilities as well as Google Alexa turn this on or turn that off. It's going to have way more integrated search.
Yeah, right. One of the things that happens, I spoke to Sonos, so we can get back to this, but not really about product, just about vision and the near future, since that's one of the companies that's really, you know, pushing software over hardware as the focus of its product.
Right. Well, we will talk about Sonos and all, and as Mike calls them, Sonos-like substances.
Yes.
But I'd like to start with the area that I particularly covered, and I know you guys saw some of it too, which was video, and in particular projectors. Now, Cedia, you know, is different from CES in that there aren't very many flat panels. There were a couple at this show, which was kind of interesting, but mostly it's projectors because we're talking about custom installation. We're talking about custom designed and installed home theaters, and those normally have projectors. And so we saw a number of projectors this year based on the new Texas Instruments DLP 4K chip, which was introduced at CEDIA last year. Now we've got a number of products that actually implement it. Mike, did you saw some of these, I imagine.
I you know, it's funny. I missed the TI-based things. I was just was knocked out by the JVC and left it there with the Sony as the second. But the other thing that I liked, there were quite a few short throws, and the SIM 2 was very elegantly done and a good picture.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Mark, did you see, you saw some of the TI ones, right? You were focused more on audio, I know, at the show, but I think you might have stopped in at a couple of those.
I was. I saw the biggest one, or one of the biggest ones, I guess, the Barco demonstration, for example.
Well, that's a that's a different story altogether.
It's still TI.
It's huge.
It's still huge.
Yes, that is still DLP. You're right. But it's a digital cinema projector. It's actually a projector.
It's
based on what you might get in, you know, out of a cinema going out to the movies. And, you know, it's a little more expensive than the rest of them, like $350,000.
But they do slap the word residential next to it. So, hey.
They do.
And there are people in the CEDIA community that sell and buy those.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's true. Now, I was sitting in the back row of that demo, and while the black levels weren't really impressive to me, they weren't last year either, the detail and the colors looked quite good to me. But, Mark, you were in the front row, and you saw some problems.
Well, my feeling was that I was seeing too much texture in the screen itself, and I asked, you know, what it could be. The theory that they gave me was that I was seeing the perforation in the screen.
It was a Stuart film screen, Studio Tech 100, which is a white unity gain screen, actually a perfect screen for a blacked out environment like that was, but it was micro perforated with speakers behind it to make it acoustically transparent.
And a problem I did see that's definitely perforation related was reflection, you know, light reflecting from behind the screen and showing back up. I don't know what you call that, but backlight. Some kind of backlight reflection.
Yeah. Effect. So the speakers behind it, which were Steinway Lingdorf, by the way, some of the light reflecting through those little perforations came back through the perforations. Again, I didn't see that from the back row. I wish I'd talked to you before the end of the show, and I could have gone back and sat in the front row and see if I could see those myself. But I can understand the problem. Sure. Mike, did you see the Barco demo?
No, I was really concentrating on the mid-priced projectors, which, again, are relatively mid-priced.
Well, that's
where I think you've got the Epson pixel shifts, the JVC no longer pixel shifts, and the Sony. And for my viewpoint, I think those were the big key items. And, again, I think the JVC, albeit at a not cheap price, was the best amongst those.
Mm-hmm. I think Tom Norton, who we had hoped to get on today, but he couldn't make it for some reason, also agrees that the JVC was certainly among the best he saw. That one was listed, they told us the price of $35,000, available in December. And that's a true 4K. That's 4096 by 2160. So it's not even UHD. Like the Sonys. The Sonys have been the only 4K projectors available up till now, really, except for the DCI ones, the digital cinema ones. And so now we have JVC, which is also LCOS, liquid crystal on silicon, although JVC calls it liquid crystal on quartz and wouldn't say that acronym.
Well, but neither does Sony, to be fair.
Oh, it's true. They call it SXRD.
Oh,
yep.
And JVC calls it DILA.
So they all have their own names for it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's all the same, basically. It's a liquid crystal imager, sitting on a reflective surface, be it silicon or quartz or whatever, and the light reflects back through the imager. But they're still liquid crystal, basically. So yeah, the JVC, Sony announced a new one, the VPL VW675ES. I didn't get the price on that. Did either of you guys?
Oh man, let me see here. I don't think so.
They might not have revealed it. Sometimes they don't.
No. It would be in my book, but
yeah, but don't worry about it. So there's those two. Then there's the Epson. Those two are the JVC and the Sony are true 4K. I mean, real, honest to goodness, native 4K. The Epson is what they call 4K enhanced, which is really a 1080p imager with the pixels shifting back and forth really quick, which is what JVC did with their e-shift. Epson calls it 4K enhanced, but it's basically the same idea.
Still like how that projector looks, though. The Epson, that's a good projector. I mean, I don't
really
care if it's
good.
Not... Yeah.
And I was just spoiled by the other two, though.
Yeah, I can dig that. Now, Epson claims that a side-by-side would reveal that, you know, the difference between 4K enhanced or pixel shifting and native 4K isn't really very, very big difference. And they've invited me to come down to their office in Long Beach sometime soon and see such a comparison. So I'm looking forward to that.
And go
ahead.
Did you get up to one of the Sony demos where they had all of them stacked up side by side?
No, I did not. I wasn't able to do that. Did you?
Yes, it did. And they had another one for the Samsung versus LG versus Z9, which was also kind of interesting. And
those are the flat panels.
Yes, yes. But the Epson, again, there's this considerable price difference, but it really just wasn't as good as the true 4Ks.
Interesting. Now, the question I always ask when you have a manufacturer-sponsored face-off or side-by-side, how did they set them up? I'm going to pay very close attention to that when I go down to Epson. You know, did they set it up so that the Sony would look better and the others would look worse? And maybe they could be closer if they were set up properly. I don't know. There's no way to tell.
The Sonys, I don't know what they did for the projectors, but for the flat panels, I think they said they were just all straight out of the box.
Right. And they often do that. They say, look, we just want to play them straight out of the box, which is the way most people will watch them. I disagree philosophically. I think they should all be calibrated fully and be on that level playing field rather than the level, quote unquote, level playing field of take it out of the box and turn it on and use it. I got a couple questions from the chat room here. Creamy Corn Cob is saying they talked about the $5,000 short throw projector up to 100 inch. Creamy Corn Cob, there were a number of short throws. Mike, you mentioned that, and we can talk about those. But one for $5,000, I don't remember which one that
was. Those were the guys, I don't remember the name of the show that was on before us. It was an Acer, and I don't really think that was what you might consider a home theater projector.
That's Twitch, which is This Week in Computer Hardware, the show right before us. And yes, that was probably not considered a home theater projector.
It was only 1080.
Okay. Well, even so, for example, Sim2 had an ultra short throw projector. And what I mean by that is, you know, you put the projector right up against the wall and it shines up at a steep angle. And I think we have a picture actually of the Sim2. We're going very fast here for Josh to pull up these photos. I sent him a bunch of photos. So sorry about that, Josh. But the Sim2 XTV is what it's called, is a 1080p also. Laser hybrid, uses a laser illumination source. There it is. And that one's 15 grand. So that's a little more expensive, but it does have the option of being installed into a cabinet, so it's essentially invisible. And it's got this really cool glass over the top. Most of these ultra short throw projectors. Yeah, they don't have any glass at all, so the lens is kind of out there waiting to be damaged. But this has got a really sophisticated piece of glass over it with minimized internal reflections. So I thought that was pretty cool.
compared to the Epson, which looked like it had the pop-up headlights from a, you know, a 56 Buick on it.
Right, exactly, exactly. Now, let's see. There's another question here. AV Pro, isn't the new TI chip not actually 4K? Great question. Actually, it's not. It does not have 8 million mirrors, micro mirrors on it. It does have 4 million mirrors. And those 4 million mirrors are shifted back and forth, just like we were talking about before. But that brings you up to true UHD resolution of 3840 by 2160. Whereas the Epson and JVC eShift take 2 million pixels, 1080p, and shifts that up to a total of 4 million on the screen, or about half of what UHD actually has. So that's a very good question. UJ, we're going to talk about Halar screens in a minute, so hang on to your hat for that. But THX1138 is bringing up a question that I really wanted to talk about with you guys, which is high dynamic range in projectors. Now, this year, we finally saw some. I mean, Sony's been doing it for a little while. JVC introduced it last year, and they're doing it again this year. But Digital Projection said to me at the show, they have one too, and based on this TI chip. And they said, but we're not implementing HDR right away because we don't think it's, you know, ready for prime time yet. It's still a bit ill-defined. Mark, what did you think of the high dynamic range projectors you saw there?
High dynamic range looks great. But look, you need a blackout theater. And maybe that's what they're afraid of, is that their clients have these interior decorator-friendly theaters that they won't see the full effect. No way you can render HDR. You know, you can throw it up there on the screen, but if that extra light, you know, just bounces back on the screen and ruins the blacks, you're done. You know, you don't have HDR after all. So I think, yeah, you have to think about the theater more than ever before, now that these projectors have that feature, and actually certify that you're getting enough contrast that you can say what I'm looking at is HDR. When you do that, yeah, I think it's an improvement over what came.
I wonder if in that price range, some of the projector guys are also waiting to see if they get the SoCs to do Dolby Vision as well as HDR10. And none of these projectors had Dolby Vision.
Nope, none of them did. And that brings up the other question of the viability or relevance of Dolby Vision in the home. It's clearly important in commercial cinema. The Dolby Cinemas use it, and it's phenomenal there. But at home, there isn't that much content. Ultra HD Blu-ray discs can have it, but none do so far. It can be streamed, but only Vudu, as far as I know, really does. And they just announced they're going to also make things available in the other format, HDR10. So I don't know, Mike, what do you think? Is Dolby Vision really viable in the home?
I think it's a couple of things. One of them is chips, and they need to have the SoCs to go into these things that do Dolby Vision. And that's why I'm really curious to see what the Oppo uses, if they're doing something that's different than the other Ultra HD players. The other part is the content. The content is coming. And I think at the bottom line, although there clearly is a cost to the brand to put Dolby Vision in. Dolby are good guys, but they're not philanthropists. They're doing this for money.
Yeah,
and I think that LG is doing it in flat panels, just to go off in a different direction for a minute. And when Ultra HD Blu-ray comes into wider distribution, and we'll see. I think Dolby just isn't going to give up on this one.
Right. I tend to agree, but there's got to be content coming out for it to be really viable. Certainly the LG OLEDs have Dolby Vision. The Vizio P-Series and Reference Series have Dolby Vision. Mark?
And M.
I was going to ask you if the M had it as well.
They all have it. Vizio is a very popular brand. Dolby Vision, you know, you can stream that with the built-in app from Vudu. That's not that bad. I mean, that's the best source for, like, early release, online purchase, and rentals. It's the one I use anyway. But I do think it's appealing, and it could float just based on that.
Yep. You know, and to Mark's point, when you go to a Dolby Vision theater and they run the trailer, and at the end the screen goes black, and then you get a title that says, "Yes, the projector is still on."
Yes.
That's what they. That just drives it into a home run.
Yeah, it really does. And interesting you mentioned that. I'm sorry, Mark, you had something else to say?
Just that the way Dolby Vision works, since it renders to the capabilities of the TV, it actually makes sense to have it on an M series, which might only go to 300 or 400 foot Lamberts. But Dolby Vision's actually optimized for that.
There's no point in nits.
I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. Nits. Whereas there's no real point in doing that with HDR10 content. You know, you'd need like the Panasonic with its variable. Tone mapping to get something similar. But anyway, Dolby Vision is more ideal for a TV that doesn't actually meet the standard, required for HDR10.
Well, that may be. Certainly, Dolby Vision is a two-layer approach, and the first layer could be standard dynamic range, and if a standard dynamic range TV gets it, it just ignores the extra stuff. But both of them are based on what's called the PQ electro-optical transfer function, which serves the same purpose as gamma used to, which is tied to absolute brightness levels. So if a content is mastered at 1,000 nits peak brightness, then if you don't have that, you're going to have to tone map it one way or the other with either of those systems.
Right. But with Dolby Vision, they're tone mapping to a golden reference that's based on the actual TV it's tone mapping to instead of guessing.
To make it more interesting, there were a couple of the projector guys, Sony, I believe, were talking about HLG just to, you know, mess everybody up.
HLG, Hybrid Log Gamma, is another high dynamic range system developed by the BBC and NHK in Japan. And I believe it's going to be applied mostly to broadcast signals. And there were a couple of projectors that actually said that they were going to have this installed. Now, Mahler Music is asking, do you think the fact that projectors are not all HDR will affect sales? I don't know. Eventually, probably. But it's still a pretty brand new thing now. So I don't think it's going to affect sales too much. Mike, what do you think?
Or if it does, they'll put it in.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really easy.
Yeah, it is. And there's another question that THX1138, part of his question brings up, and that is the other end of the spectrum. Mark, you talked about black level, but there's also the brightness, the peak brightness. How bright can it get? And projectors are going to get nowhere near what flat panel, even OLEDs, nowhere near what they can get. And so I think that also speaks to your point of you really need a blacked out room in order to see high dynamic range from a projector particularly.
Well, I'll throw this out. You could take like a 2,000 lumen, you know, DLP projector, maybe costs $1,500, has a 6-segment RGB color wheel, and project it on a 1.3 gain screen that's, let's say, only 85 inches diagonal. It would get pretty darn bright in a blacked out room.
Yep.
And you'd be saving quite a bit of money versus a TV of that size that has that capability. If, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that that's this or that, but I mean, I could see something like that happening.
Mm-hmm.
Where a projector and a small high-gain screen gets you an HDR experience.
And remember, it's not just about the brightness. And a lot of the pro guys, I think Scott will hear a lot about that at Simpty next month. It's not about, is it this many nits or that many nits? Is, are they here or are they here or are they here? And that's as important as exactly how many, you know, where do you put them as opposed to what they are?
Yeah, that's a good point. And certainly, to me, black level is a critical factor here. And as Mark and I were talking offline about this, and you know, you can prioritize the different aspects of a picture. What's more important to you? Color accuracy, image pixel resolution, black level. You know, there's all kinds of things you can say that's more important to me than one thing or another. But for me, black level is certainly among the top. And all these projectors that we've been talking about that were at the show, even the Barco, the $350,000 DCI projector, none of them had a black level that I was really impressed with, except one. And that was the Wolf Cinema SDC-15, I believe it is. Yeah. Which is DILA. It's basically the JVC. Here's a picture of it. on the ceiling. It's sort of last year's JVC rebadged and tweaked quite a bit. And it has high dynamic range capability and at this e-shift business instead of true native 4K. And the black level on that thing was amazing. Clearly the best at the show that I saw. Did either of you guys see it?
No, but I think I want to go back to the question, which is, will the projectors have these things? And again, remembering what the large segment of the CEDIA market is, if the consumers demand these things, the projector manufacturers will have it. The guys, if you will, on what's called the Bel Air circuit, who watched first-run movies in their homes and used to have film projectors, they're going to want it, and the manufacturers will provide it because otherwise they'll stop selling them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, we got a lot more to talk about, but before we do, I would like to thank one of our sponsors for this episode, which is Epson. Now, Epson's revolutionary cartridge-free EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. The EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer doesn't use ink cartridges. Instead, it features an amazing, innovative, refillable ink tank, earning it the title of CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. So you have no more out-of-ink frustration. It includes up to 2 years of ink, equal to about 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. You can save up to 80% on ink with low-cost replacement bottles. It's also powered by Precision Core printing technology. It has auto two-sided printing and a 30-page auto document feeder, and easy wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. All EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value. With Epson's EcoTank line of printers, you'll have the freedom to print without running out of ink. In fact, the Epson EcoTank system was named the 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year. So visit Epson.com/EcoTank today to transform the way your home, office, or workgroup prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the Epson EcoTank printers. That's EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks. Epson, exceed your vision. So we've been talking about projectors, including those from Epson and the Epson LS10500, which is a laser hybrid illuminated. And we saw quite a few laser projectors actually at the show as well. And I think it was the least expensive at $8,000. So that was pretty good. The Wolf Cinema, there's the Epson. It's a pretty big projector, but it did look very good, I thought. They were showing some scenes from the movie Lucy and from a Philips player, Philips UHD player. So I thought that looked pretty good. You guys agree? Did you see? You must have seen it, right?
Yes. Again, third time, I just can't get over the JVC, but it's three times the price, for goodness sake.
Yeah, exactly.
But I want it.
Yeah, well, who can blame you? Speaking of UHD players, Sony announced the UBPX1000ES. I think we have a picture of that one. And we don't know the price on that yet, unless you guys heard it.
Nope.
No price yet.
No pricing yet. But it's going to join the Samsung, the Philips, and then there was the odd story of the Oppo. Now, we've all been waiting for Oppo, which makes really probably the best Blu-ray player on the market. Certainly the one I use as a reference. A lot of people do on AVS. And they've been rumored to be working on a UHD Blu-ray player, and who can blame them? But we haven't seen it officially. But I ran into Jason, one of the mucky mucks at Oppo, and I said, I asked him, I said, hey, what about the Oppo player? He said, opened up his bag and said, it's in here.
Is that an Ultra HD Blu-ray player in your bag, or are you glad to see me?
Are you just happy to see me? Yeah, right. So we don't know when it's going to be released. They weren't officially showing it at the show. But boy, oh boy, we can't wait. And not only that, somebody saw it on the website, and I've heard it elsewhere, that the list price is going to be $500. I thought it was going to be twice that much. And so if that's true, that's really quite astonishing.
Way to generate a buzz, though.
Yeah, I mean, really. Really. Just, everybody was buzzing. Like,
I'm uncharacteristically speechless.
Well, that is uncharacteristic for you. That is true. Before we leave projectors, I want to just mention a couple of ambient light rejecting screens. Mark, you mentioned earlier that high dynamic range really requires a blacked out room, but a lot of people have their projector in a non-blacked out room. And so what do you do? Well, one solution is to get what's called an ambient light rejecting screen, which basically reflects light back to you from the projector, but light from elsewhere in the room, off to the sides, above, or whatever, gets reflected away, and you get a much better picture. And there were quite a few of them there. Kind of impressive, too. I think probably one of the most impressive I saw was the Stuart Phantom, called HALR, High Ambient Light Rejecting. I mean, that was a gigantic screen, and it looked pretty good right out there on the show floor, don't you think?
I thought it looked great. And as they noted, it's the first one that can be rolled and perforated.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a very cool screen. I mean, I saw a little bit of that surface texture, pearlescent, you know, kind of effect, but not enough to call it distracting, and only when I was pretty close to it.
Right. But at a normal seating distance, it probably wouldn't have been a problem.
Yep. Yeah. Especially a big screen like that.
Yeah, it was big. Elite Screens had their Dark Star Efinity, which also looked quite good. I think I have a picture of that. And by the way, the Stuart can be made at sizes up to 90 feet by 40 feet seamless. I mean, that's bigger than your commercial cinema, most of them. You know, that's almost IMAX size. Quite amazing.
Can I throw in another screen thing, Scott?
Oh, yeah,
Frigo?
Please.
One of the things that I, not related to brightness or ambient light rejection, but I thought at least clever, was the Screen Innovations screen, where instead of being rolled up into the ceiling, it rolled up from the bottom so that it didn't have the side tabs. And I just think that was very clever.
Oh, that was the Transformer. Is that what that was? Yeah.
Well, it had a different name, though, this time.
Oh, did it?
It was on the side wall of their booth, but it was actually kind of clever.
Yeah, I didn't actually look at that one as much as I did the Zero G, which does come down from the ceiling.
Okay, and I was looking at the Zero G.
The Zero G was the one that they were kind of touting more than the Transformer, although they did have a Transformer standing in their booth.
Transformer was broken when I was there. That's why
I get my impression
of that. Yep.
All right. Well, that's it. two flat panel pieces of news that I just wanted to make sure we covered, which are that the LG G6 OLED, their signature series, top-of-the-line flagship OLED, they announced the 77-inch version was finally going to be available, and they announced the price for it. And while it's a lot, $20,000 for a 77-inch OLED, I didn't think was terribly out of line.
And it was really good.
And it really looked great.
And to be fair, they had great booth position. So if you walked in one of the doors into the exhibit floor, it was right there. And people just stopped and looked at it. Whereas seeing the Samsung or the Z9, you had to wander into the show.
Right, exactly. And speaking of the Z9, oh, sorry, Mark, you had something to say?
Yeah, that's where Crestron used to be.
LG took over the Crestron spot?
Yeah, the best spot on this floor, of course.
Yeah. Well, Sony had a big booth, of course, too, and they made an announcement, a flat panel announcement also. We've known about their new flagship called the Z9 series, which is phenomenal, for easily the best LCD I've ever seen. But they finally announced, again, the pricing for their 100-inch Z9, which they announced when they first showed it a couple months ago. But now we have a price for that. 100 inches, $60,000. It's like, holy smokes.
If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
Yeah, I guess so. Let's see. THX1138 is saying, yeah, the Oppo UHD Blu-ray player is going to be a game changer if it has Dolby Vision for $500. I agree with that. But we shall see. So then the only other things I wanted to cover before we get to audio, and we got plenty of audio stuff to talk about too. Let's see. I thought this was interesting, and it ties in with, Mike, one of your favorite things, which I'll get to in a minute. The Dish Playmaker. It's a portable dish, satellite dish antenna. And you can take it wherever you go, as long as you have power, I guess. We have a picture of that, I think. There it is. It's inside that dome thing. And it auto-tracks and finds the satellite within, they said, about 10 minutes. And next to it on the table, you can see the little receiver that goes with it. It's called the Wally. Single-tuner receiver with no hard disk in it. But you could put attach a hard disk to it and make it a DVR. And
that was kind of cool. There have been third-party things like that for quite a while. I mean, you go to an RV park and you see them all over the place. But I thought you're actually going to go in a different direction. I was surprised to see the big booth from Comcast. And one of the things that they said, which I found kind of interesting, is that they're going to do an upgrade to some of their Xfinity boxes to possibly add HDR. I'm a little... that's like Sony adding HDR to the current PlayStation 4s, but they said they were going to do that, and it was the first time I heard anybody from Charter or Comcast say that they were going to get into HDR.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that too. The Xfinity X1, I believe, is the,
yes,
is the receiver that they were going to add HDR to. I hope they do. I mean, I don't have Comcast. Where I am, it's Charter. I think, Mike, you too.
Yep, soon. Today.
As of today. Okay. And then, but this Playmaker, this portable satellite antenna, which has to be stationary, by the way, it's not like an RV or a yacht where it can track a station while it's moving. It can't do that. But I thought it dovetailed beautifully into the tailgate flat panel mount. I really want you to tell us about that.
Do you have a picture of that?
I'm pretty sure we do. It's called the tailgate something.
It's just one of those things that you only see at a place like Cedia. Now, in fairness, this is the mount plugged into a picture on the wall, but it's how to have your TV at your tailgate, and you just put it into the trailer hitch. I guess you have to have one of those as seen on TV over-the-air antennas for it when you're parked, or one of your Playmakers.
Exactly. That's what I was
thinking. There's a good connection,
there
Scott.
It is.
Yep, exactly,
but
right.
It was just funny to see it. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see. Muchacho says, I returned the 75-inch Sony 940D, a really nice TV, and got the 65-inch Z series. 75 inches magnifies all the noise. There is that problem, isn't there? And the 100-inch would do that even more. It all depends on the quality of your input signal, right?
Well, and also the Z9s just have a totally different way of the, as we saw when we were down at Sony. It really is a better set. It probably is the best LED LCD set that's out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. well, let's move on to audio then, because there was an awful lot there too. And Mark, you were focused more on audio at the show. So give us a couple of things that caught your attention there.
Well, something that definitely caught my attention was Monoprice, because they had this huge subwoofer. And you know what? That's become... the most popular post that I put on AVS at this point. So the reason for that is the driver in it, 15-inch driver, is from a company called TC Sounds, which was very popular in the DIY crowd, considered some of the best drivers for subwoofers you could buy. And a few years ago, that all disappeared, and now it's reappeared in the form of this sub. The measurement that they cited using the CEA 2010 peak burst method can be translated to numbers on database.com, and what they're saying this sub can do seems impossible to some AVS members, on the very edge of possibility to some other people. So yeah, here you have a potential new contender for, like, real king of the hill subwoofer from Monoprice. Nobody's expecting that.
Yeah.
And then additionally at their booth, they had these speakers that they're calling the K-Bass or K, I don't know.
KBAS.
But they're actually licensing the technology from Atlantic Technologies, and it's like a new port configuration that's supposed to give, you know, enhanced bass performance. Those sounded really sweet.
Is that an H-Pass, Mark?
Exactly. It's an H-Pass. Yes.
H-Pass, by the way, is a technology from Atlantic Technology, which gives the speakers, even small ones, a much greater bass extension using special porting. So that's exactly what Mark, you were talking about there, right?
Yeah, right out there on the show floor with no help from a subwoofer. They were rocking. I was impressed. So, yeah.
Did they give any prices for either the sub or the K-Bass?
The sub is not firm, but maybe in the $1,500 range. Those speakers were $500 a pair. There was more. There were planar magnetic headphones, an expansion of their line of monolith amplifiers. Really just, you know, a company that you had previously thought of as like real bottom dollar home theater in the box type products. And now there's a level up, you know, more performance oriented line. We'll see how they do with it, but you know, those are serious entries. They also had AMT tweeter, Air Motion tweeter center and bookshelves. Quite a lot of stuff from that company. And I'm curious because it's always, you know, bottom dollar kind of price.
Yeah, situation. Exactly. Very value oriented, but now it looks like they're upping their game in terms of performance. So the price performance ratio should get better.
That's what you're looking for. Yep.
Cool, man. What else did you see that really impressed you?
Well, I think it's the proliferation of networked audio systems, the whole home audio. But I mean, it's really catching on. Last year, I was like, you know, is Heos going to make it? Is Sonos going to just, you know, rule things on its own? Now it's like, you know, you see devices supporting both Google Cast and DTS PlayFi. You see Heos, you know, teaming up with Amazon, Sonos teaming up with Amazon. So you have Alexa control. I mean, just everybody's got networking, and you can see that, you know, I think people are going to, I mean, even in the high-end, high-performance, you know, markets that traditionally maybe they haven't cared about what's happening with lifestyle audio, like smartphones kind of took over from laptops, I think that people are going to be drawn to it out of the sheer convenience of it. And so I guess you just have to hope that they also develop the quality-oriented aspects of it, make sure that they support, you know, high bit rates and don't compress audio and give us, you know, multi-channel. I mean, Heos just added 5.1. I heard a 5.1 system for the first time where you could take a couple of your portable radios and just put them behind you and temporarily assign them as rears, you know, and they're wireless and you watch a movie, but then you just, you know, somebody grabs one, somebody grabs the other, and the next thing you know, you're listening to it in the kitchen and somebody else is in the den.
Amazing.
With it, you know.
And not only that, that Heos is Denon's system, and they also incorporated this Heos into an AVR. We have a picture of that to show.
Sure. Yep.
I was going to go there because one of the interesting things is the reverse of what Mark was saying is that Heos is not only in Denon, Yamaha's putting MusicCast in their AVRs, Pioneer's putting Blackfire in theirs. So this integration of the Sonos-like substance into the AVR also means that you're not dependent on a smaller amplifier and smaller speakers, but you're running it in your home theater system with decent amps and decent speakers, hopefully.
Yeah.
Pioneer and Onkyo now have DTS PlayFi also.
Right. Do we have a picture of a Def
Deck? That's pretty major, actually.
Nope, doesn't look like we do. Oh, maybe we do. I was looking. There it is.
Yep. So there it is. I actually heard this demo. Those in the foreground, those two speakers you see there are wireless speakers. They serve as surrounds in a DTS 5.1 demo.
But then the interesting thing is, so we mentioned Denon Heos, Yamaha MusicCast, Pioneer Blackfire, PlayFi Onkyo. Those are all different. This different thing, the same thing being done different ways.
Yes.
So if you want to proliferate it around your house, you got to decide.
Yep.
And if you want Sonos, none of these things work.
That's right. And
I'm a fan
of a real
PlayFi.
Problem. You're a fan of PlayFi, Mark?
PlayFi and also Google Cast, because those are the two that sort of span multiple brands. I do like an open architecture, sort of a notion where you can choose products from different brands and mix and match. Mm-hmm. That certainly still appeals to me. But I also get from tight integration, you know, standpoint why, you know, the brand specific stuff. If we should get to the piano from Yamaha that incorporates Music Class, I'm like, you know, okay, a piano, you know, that's connected to this stuff. But yeah,
this was very cool. I think we have a picture of the disc clavier. Which is from Yamaha. They've had a disc clavier for many, many years. Basically, a player piano, a modern player piano with actuators that play the keys and play the piano based upon signal coming in. The signal being of the MIDI format, probably. But Mark, now they've got something else going here.
Yeah, so they get MIDI from or some variant of MIDI from live performances that actually mimics the key presses of the performer, and they also get accompaniment tracks in MIDI. And what this piano can do is it can play, and also with a built-in synthesizer, it can create that accompaniment and send that accompaniment out to Music Cast-enabled devices. So. And also, if you're in another room and you want the piano as well, because you can't hear it, because, you know, it's in your living room and you're in the bedroom, it'll synthesize the piano as well. So when you're around the real piano, it plays real piano. If you want to add the rest of the performance, it'll send that to speakers. And as you walk around your house, you get to also hear that whole combined thing.
Network. Pretty amazing. Yeah. Pretty amazing. You know, I used to cover the musical instrument industry many years ago, and the disc clavier was well received and well liked back then. I love Yamaha acoustic pianos just for their sound, and now they've upped the ante in the home thing. But of course, a disc clavier grand piano like we just saw, that's going to be some serious money.
Sure. How about a Bösendorfer with Sonos?
Yeah, there you go. I'm liking it.
Oh, wait a minute, Steinway Lingdorf.
There you go. I wonder if I've been wondering about that. Steinway Lingdorf is a big very high-end audio company. They make speakers and pre-pro and amplifiers and stuff. But they are related to the Steinway Piano Company. So maybe there's some cross-integration that can happen there. Speaking of Steinway Lingdorf, you guys, Mike, you said you didn't get into the Barco demo. Did you
hear
any?
They wouldn't let me in. I don't know why.
Well, because they were taking reservations for the whole damn show. It was amazing.
That's the reason.
Yeah, well, Mark, you got in and heard it, and I heard it, and I was super impressed. That was one of the best-sounding demos at the show for me.
Totally. The sound was great. I had no complaints. I agree.
Yeah. Another demo that I thought really sounded very good was Harman. You know, Harman had JBL Synthesis there. All the speakers were based on their M2 architecture. And I thought that also sounded really good. What particularly struck me about that demo was that it could play very loud, but not in an irritating or painful way. I mean, you know me, I'm always complaining about things being too loud. But for the duration of the demo anyway, I didn't feel like I had to put my fingers in my ears, even though it was pretty loud.
Yeah, it doesn't beat up your eardrums, but you feel it. I mean, there's real movement in the air, and it, yeah, you yeah. crunches and stuff register in your bones.
Yep. Well, they had eight. Sorry, Mike.
No, there's just so much experience there that goes into the synthesis that, you know, you'd expect nothing less from them, but you get it. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, before we continue, I'd like to thank our other sponsor for this episode, which is Grasshopper. Now, Grasshopper is a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but it requires no hardware purchase or software installation. With their iOS and Android app, callers can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. When you make a call, your clients see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your iPhones. Simply select a toll-free number or a local number, record a custom greeting, and add multiple extensions for your business. Toll-free numbers are great for marketing and make your business sound more professional. Setup department and employee extensions with their custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. You can also get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. So join over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month. and you have a 30-day money-back guarantee. So turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks. One thing I wanted to mention before we finish up here, we got a little bit of time left. There were a number of architectural speakers that turned up there from a couple of unlikely sources. Mark, what did you find there?
Well, we found ELAC and Andrew Jones with new architectural speakers on the budget side of things. But with his talent, I would think sounding as good as the Bookshelf and Towers that he's recently released. Those are the Unify, which would be the step up from the debut line, what we're looking at here, which in the Bookshelf form are exceptional speakers. So the reason, the logic behind this, he said, is because people feel insecure about mixing and matching brands, you know, so they wanted architectural speakers to complement maybe the towers they bought and give them surround. And there are also some angled speakers for in-ceiling use with you know, for Atmos type setups. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Andrew Jones entering that space. Maybe at the high end of the price scheme, we had Kef with a $10,000 THX certified reference, literally from their reference line, you know, in-wall speaker. You know, reference that they're explaining is meaningful to that company because they were the first ones to use a computer and measurement to match production speakers to a golden reference, like original model, and that's still done for these. That's all the way on the left there with the copper Uni-Q driver. The mm-hmm. reference. So anyway, so there's a $10,000 speaker for your wall needs,
as opposed to the ELACs, which are on the order of you know, $500 to $1,000 a pair, depending on the model. Yeah.
Quite the span in prices at that show.
Yeah.
Another architectural thing which merges the design with audio is the stuff that B&O is doing in conjunction with Origin. And for those who don't know Origin, it's the company run by Jeremy Burkhart, who is originally the founder of Speakercraft.
Right. So they were big into architectural.
Yes, yes.
And Origin is as well. Interestingly, we have a picture, I think, from you of a B&O speaker. It's not an in-wall, but it's a really cool picture, so I wanted to make sure we took a look at it real quick.
That's the one that wins the
lava lamp.
You can
lamp.
Never be, the lava can never lamp. Be too rich, too thin, or have too many drivers.
Then there's Goldenear, which also had an all-in-wall Atmos system, basically, immersive sound system in its demo. And we do have a picture of that, I'm pretty sure, of me sitting there. Mark, tell us about what we're looking at here.
Well, you're looking at their in-wall speakers, which are kind of mounted in these ultra-thin, tall boxes to emulate wall cavities. The tower speakers on the outside weren't playing. Those were for dealer demos. So, sure, it's a 5.1.4 system with angled in-ceiling HTR 7000s. And then on the front and back walls were these, do you remember what they're called? MPX or something like that?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Model number notwithstanding. And then the other item here, which was the show, what they actually introduced at the show was their Super Sub X, which is an approximately 1 cubic foot, you know, rather small subwoofer with dual opposed 8-inch drivers and dual opposed 10-inch passive radiators, which was just generating a lot of bass for its size.
It was doing an amazing job for its size. There's just one of them in there.
Yeah, so the idea was that it was an invisible system. The subwoofer is very small and easy to hide, and everything else is architectural. And yeah, I thought it was very smooth sounding, very precise. You know, not as good, I think, as if they had used actual tower speakers and gone all out with like Goldenear's best, you know, but that wasn't the idea. These are $500 piece architectural speakers mounted as if they were in walls and giving you the kind of sound field, you know, that maybe you'd associate with, you know, a decent non-architectural system.
Mm-hmm. Mark, you found something that I thought was really interesting. It's kind of fun, but I think probably also high performing, and that's the James speaker, steampunk speaker.
So that was pretty unusual, and I got into like what the whole thinking behind that was, because James builds custom speakers, and they can take a client's wishes and render them aesthetically, and in this case they wanted steampunk, so there were various elements like leather and knobs and dials and the pipes, and in this picture you can just barely see there's like a faucet knob back there. And it's also cool because this tweeter is mounted in one of their landscape cans that they just, would normally use for landscape speakers, but they repurposed it to look a little bit like a periscope kind of thing. And
when I saw that, I thought it was a goof. I didn't realize at first it was a real speaker.
It's actually a model of, or it's a third iteration of a speaker or pair that they built for a client. And then they just took that design and made this, extra one to show people.
Mm-hmm.
They could execute something like
that. Rusty Bones in the chat room is asking about any thoughts about Atmos-enabled up-firing speakers. I didn't see very many of those at the show, but I wasn't covering audio. Mark, did you see many?
Well, Definitive Technology rolled out their BP series, and the flagship actually has built-in Atmos capability, and the other towers are compatible with their new A90 module, which is supposed to be a significant improvement over their previous BP series towers and module. So yes, I did see and listen to that system. I also encountered Reflective Atmos in the form of sound bars.
Another question. Yeah, that's another subject we should spend a moment on. Atmos sound bars. There were several of them there.
Yes. The most intriguing one was, I thought, the one from Pioneer Elite, because they took all the electronics and amplification out of the bar and put it into a separate box. I mean, it's basically a receiver soundbar combo because that box has all the power, and capabilities of their receivers in it, including room correction and Wi-Fi and everything. And by doing so, they actually freed up space for the drivers themselves. So it's extremely low profile, but with that extra room for the amps, it's powerful. It's 3.1.2. I had gotten into a discussion in a thread we have from Dolby about what Dolby Atmos enabled speakers are, and somebody had asked me, is 3.1, does 3.1.2 make 3.1 systems better? Well, I just learned that, yeah, if you just want a soundbar with no other speakers in the room, it's just that, then 3.1.2 is better than 3.1. A lot better, because all those overhead ambient effects, rain, flyover, even if it's upsampling using Dolby Digital and not true Atmos, it expands that soundstage without, literally having to, put more speakers in the room. And of course, Yamaha has a version of that's much more sophisticated, but it's also a much taller soundbar and you can't place it in front of a TV. So here's something you can put in front of a TV, and on its own is going to generate some interesting atmospheric effects and not just be a little constrained,
I just think it's bogus, though, to call that a soundbar, because if you stop people and say soundbar, they think of this thing that you put under or above the TV set. And it's just the way I would define it. Having that box behind it disqualifies it. As soundbar, it's just a standalone thing with a sub.
Only then Samsung has a soundbar that can go just in front of a TV and, is low profile enough. The 3.1.2 version of their Atmos soundbar. I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, it's. I think this one's pretty cool because you're still going to have a cable that they have to plug into a wall and maybe into the TV. So, hey, if you could find a place to put that box, maybe mounted behind the TV or something, it's a thing. I don't know. I thought it sounded good.
If it works, it's cool.
Yeah, exactly. the other audio thing that I want to make sure we mention is Grimani Systems. Now, we saw and heard them last year, and this year they had their speakers here. And last year it was easily the best sound of the show, and this year was no different. I wouldn't say easily the best sound at the show, but it was certainly exceptional sound. This year they were out in the middle of the big giant convention center with no acoustic treatment, no walls. I mean, it was basically an open space, and it sounded really great, I thought. And One thing that I want to mention is a photo that we have here that Anthony Grimani made a point of having people come in. He had a chair there and the martini glass and everything. And he had us put on the leather jacket and a wig and the dark glasses. Remember the ad campaign? I think it was from the 80s. Is it Live or is it Memorex?
With L100s.
With L100s, yes. And here is his speaker with me sitting in that chair with that wig on. He had this all set up to look just like that ad. And anybody who wanted to could take a picture, you know, as if they were in that ad. And so I had to show that to people because it's so hilarious. Mike, you got one too, didn't you?
Yes. And I just want to put one other thing in. You were talking about how well that worked in open space. And I said something to Tony, where's the center channel? This sounds really good. He said, no, we didn't bring the whole thing. But also in that part of the hall was a French thing called Daviolet, I believe, that looked yes. like little R2-D2 heads. And just what you said about having really good sound in a totally open, non-sound room environment, I have to say I was impressed by that.
And we have a picture of there's Yeah, those guys. You took that picture.
The Phantom. Daviolet Phantom.
The Phantom, yes.
They claim you can do up to a 100.100 system with those.
Now you just need to have the room.
Yes.
Oh, man.
But just from an appearance standpoint, it was obviously, if that's your taste, it was good. But I have to say, for something playing in free space, I was very impressed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, man, there's so much more to talk about, but we're almost out of time here. So I have to get to my last question, which is your picks for best of show, video and audio, based on what you saw. Mark, let's start with you.
All right. I'm going to go with the Epson because I just didn't get to see that JVC. I know that's the best one in the show, or the Wolf. I know those are, but I got to go with what I saw.
Okay.
But we'll go with sound, and I'm going to go for the Polk Magnify mini soundbar. Little $300 thing, tiny.
You're kidding. Best sound at the show? Really?
No. Not actual best sound. I'm just kidding. But I'm going to have to go with the Steinway Lingdorf and the Barco demo. It's not the first time that Steinway Lingdorf just really blew me away with just the total package.
Yep, yep. And that system was merely $140,000. So, great. Mike, what best of show?
Well, in a toss-up between the JVC and the Samsung, LG Signature OLED beating out the Z9 kind of by a hair. The Signature OLED was just really good. And in terms of audio, although I didn't listen to that many of them, I like that Phantom just for giving it extra credit for performance and free space.
The Daviolet.
The one we just showed, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, all right. And I have to say that my picks for best in show are going to be the JVC also for overall picture quality. But Black Level, absolutely the Wolf. And that the Wolf Cinema, even though it wasn't native 4K, had the best black level by far. But it also, you know, the image just looked fantastic. So even E-Shift, you know, this sort of pixel wiggling technology can look fantastic. It can look great. And it really did in the case of the Wolf. So it's a toss-up for me between those two. I'd say audio-wise, I have to agree, the Steinway Lingdorf in the Barco Residential Room for surround sound was phenomenal. The Harman system came pretty close, but I'd probably give it to the Steinway Lingdorf. And I have to say also the Grimani system, not because they took a picture of me in that chair, but it really sounded amazing.
Scott, what would you say in affordable? I mean, those are all cool, really great sounding things, but what would you say was your best in show? I'd be curious to hear at kind of, you know, more human-like prices.
Good point. And I would have to say, because I wasn't following audio as much, so I didn't hear everything audio-wise, but I still like the Golden Ear. I still like the Golden Ear demo quite a bit. And that was, the whole system was well under $10,000, I think. Mark, am I right about that?
As far as the speakers and Subway, yeah.
Sandy Gibbs, good speaker.
Sandy Gibbs, really good speaker. And
I got goosebumps in that demo twice. I didn't get goosebumps in any other demo, so I must.
There you go. Yes. Mark, what do you think about real world pricing, best of show audio? You agree, Golden Ear, or did you hear something else that you liked better?
Again, the goosebumps. Basically, I have to give it for the goosebumps. I mean, I want to say
it.
Yeah. What can I say? Yes, Golden Ear.
Yeah. I have to say, I have to mention also that there was another demo that was supposed to be, you know, really the end of the best possible from a company called Alcons over in the high performance area. And Mark, you and I went in there at the same time, and it was just too damn loud. I mean, they were granted, they were playing it for somebody who wanted to see how loud it went. And I measured well over 100 decibels, a weight.
Whoa!
it was insane. It was just insane. And I ran not quite screaming from the room, but almost. And they brought it back down for me after that client had left. And it was still really loud and kind of harsh sounding to me.
But that was the question. When they turned it down, did it sound as good, other than for the sheer SPL, as when it was loud?
No, I didn't think so. That was my opinion.
It kind of beat you up a bit. It was like the indie race car of sound systems there. I mean, you're not going to drive it through town. Every pothole is going to be, you know, brain shattering. And
yeah,
the
right.
One thing you can do with it is go faster than you could in anything else. I mean, it's pretty clear that system's peak capacity. When he was playing it ridiculously loud, he still had huge amounts of leeway. Dangerous amounts of leeway on it.
Yeah, I mean, dangerous amounts of leeway. Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Well, it's been fascinating to remember. It's not been that long ago now that we were all in Dallas, but we heard and saw tons of great stuff. So I think we are looking forward to a great year in home theater. So I want to thank you both very much for being here. Mike Heiss, where can people find you?
Residentialsystems.com and hiddenwires.co.uk. And at Captain Vid.
At Captain Vid on Twitter, right. And Mark, obviously you're on AVS Forum with me. And your Twitter handle also at AVS Forum.
Yep.
So thank you both very much for joining me today. It's been great.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, Scott. Yeah, great.
All right. So, of course, you can find me and Mark both at avsforum.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott and also at avsforum. You can always find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks right here at twit.tv/htg and or on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/twithometheatergeeks. Next week, I will be up in Petaluma. I will be calibrating Leo Laporte's new LG B6 OLED along with my friend Robert Herron. We will be in his house, and we will be filming it, videoing it, I guess. You can't say film anymore, obviously. But we'll be doing that on Wednesday, and it'll get edited into the podcast for Thursday. So I'm not quite sure if they're going to live stream it or not. I tend to suspect not, but I actually don't know. But I do hope you'll tune in on Thursday anyway for the show, because it should be really, really interesting. Robert and I will be geeking out over an LG OLED TV, which I'm really, really looking forward to. Then the following Saturday and Sunday, October 1st and 2nd, I will be filling in for Leo on the radio show, The Tech Guy. So if you're anywhere where there's a radio and the station that carries The Tech Guy, I hope you'll tune in or tune in here at live.twit.tv and join in the chat room, because I'll be there both days, all 3 hours, geeking out about home theater. It's going to be loads of fun. Until then, geek out.